Please be seated.
Well, good morning and welcome from me too. My name is Sean Davidson. I am still a pastor here at Church of the Resurrection for a little bit yet. Special welcome to those who are new. I think that there are a number of us who are new this morning. You might be visiting. It's great to have you here. You'll notice that there's coffee and tea on at the back. We've got a little lunch afterwards. Please stick around. We'd love to connect with you. Well, today's my last day. It's finally come to this, and I can hardly believe it. Feels like yesterday that I was standing here giving my first sermon at Church of the Resurrection. Please forgive me if I go on a little longer than usual this morning. I don't want to leave. Let me begin by simply saying thank you. Julie. Oh, it happened early. Thank you for your support and mentorship and encouragement that you've given to me, letting me be myself, give me freedom to explore. It's been huge, and I'm grateful. You're a very good friend. Steve and Heidi, wherever you are, thank you for including me as a member of the team. I've loved partnering with you in ministry. We've had fun together, haven't we?
Yeah.
Wardens and leadership team, wherever you are, thank you for being so kind to a newbie like me and for being patient as well. It's been a privilege to be alongside, learning with you and learning from you. And Church of the Resurrection, you are amazing. I'm going to miss you. I'm going to really, really miss you. Thank you for being so open to me and including me in the life that you share here. That's a hard thing to do when you know that the time is short, isn't it? There's so much that I would like to say, but it could probably be summed up just in this way. Thank you for teaching me to be a better pastor. You know, I never aspired to any of this. Who would? I actually guarded against it for many years. My biggest fear was that I would get frustrated and burn out, like so many people that I knew, and good friends too. I also worried that my family would suffer. Neither has happened at Resurrection. Not even close. In fact, I've experienced the exact opposite. You've been so good to me and my family, and I've learned so much. Thank you so much. Over the past couple of years, I've loved trying to describe Church of the Resurrection to others. Because we're so unique, aren't we? That's true in my experience, at least. It's the community, of course. It's the people. We're such a wonderful, eclectic, quirky bunch, aren't we? How in the world did this happen? You could not plan it if you tried. Like, just look around at us. There are so many church backgrounds represented here. One-time Baptists and Brethren. Roman Catholics, Reformed, Presbyterians, nuns and duns. Anglicans like to talk about being a big tent. High church, broad church, low church. Anglo-Catholic, liberal, evangelical. That sort of thing. Well, despite our size, the tent is even wider here, I think. And I think we are the better for it. Somehow we have the freedom to set our sights high and to major on the majors, drawing on the best from our varied experiences and learnings. It's so good. There's also this freedom to join in together and to share in leadership at every level. I'll never forget my first assignment. Julie asked me to figure out how many small groups we have at Church of the Resurrection. Think of that for a second. I wasn't sure what to say at first. Why don't you know how many small groups you have at Church of the Resurrection was my obvious question. And she said, well, I think we know of some, but we don't know of all because of the way things work here, right? There's this freedom to be gathering in these small groups and sharing, really sharing in life together. And so I did my best to figure out who those core leaders of those small groups were, and I invited 15 people to a lunch. 20 showed up. That tells you something. That tells you something, right? And we went around the circle, and I was stunned. I had a whole agenda and everything, and I put it aside because I invited people to share and say what small group they were part of. And as we went around, I realized that people were not just part of one group, but in many cases, two, three, four, five different groups, not all leading, but certainly participating in these different groups, and it was amazing. And I wasn't sure what to say, because I haven't experienced that in any church before, really. And so I just paused after everyone shared, and I said, why in the world are you doing this? And it was Vicki Merrick, I think, who put up her hand, and she said, well, I'm pretty new here. She said, I know why I do it. It's because it brings me life. Yeah. So lay leadership, it's incredible. And it's been amazing to be part of all of that. And this is true not only in terms of our small groups, but also just about everything that happens at Resurrection. No one is waiting on the professionals to show up. I love that. There's this amateur spirit at the heart of our life together. People are free to connect, to explore new possibilities, and to collaborate with each other. I'm not sure I've experienced anything like it before. You know, one of my highlights most recently was the youth-led service. I see you all at the back there. I love you guys. I'm going to lose it again. It's an amazing thing when your youth come to you unbidden and say, we would like to lead music some Sunday, because they've been learning instruments and singing together and figuring out worship songs all on their own. And I was kind of taken aback. I wasn't sure what. I said, yeah, of course, but do you want to take the whole service? They didn't know what they were getting themselves into. And they went away and talked about it and came back and said, yeah, we want to do a whole service. And I said, I'd love to walk with you in that. And we did. We walked together in that. And that was huge learning for me and an amazing experience being with you guys. And what was awesome for me was watching you take responsibility, not only willingly, but with joy. You had fun. You had fun, and you led us. And you did well in leading us, too. And I think that there's something really amazing about a community that can foster that, right? That freedom, that sense of freedom and responsibility with fun, with our youth, of all people. When we too often are putting our youth off to the side and asking them to wait way too long before they participate in leadership. Thank you to our youth. These are some of the things I appreciate about Church of the Resurrection. Of course, like all churches, we also have our challenges, don't we? Now, after completing our missional experiment at St. Columba a few years ago, we began refreshing our sense of who we are as a congregation and how we want to be known in our neighborhood. And this came to a head in our retreat last fall. If not St. Columba, then what? Where will we focus our energies and how will we serve in the wider community? More recently, since Vestry in February, we've been exploring related practical issues like staffing, accessibility, ongoing maintenance, and capital projects for the future. All of this has been really challenging and at times sobering. We've got some limitations. This isn't to say the challenges are insurmountable. They aren't. But I think we're wary of getting off course as we try to meet them. It seems one of the biggest questions before us is this. How are we to be more intentional and strategic with a clear sense of purpose without becoming a top-down, programmatic, corporate-style church? Another way to put it, how are we to retain, right, the organic grassroots culture that we have here while working in concert together from a shared sense of mission? Of course, this isn't a new dilemma. Many churches have to wrestle with questions like these all the time. It's just where we're at right now. So what do we do? What's the right answer? How do we navigate these waters? To be honest, I'm not sure. It's awfully tempting to play the problem solver. I love to do that. But I suspect that that's not exactly helpful. This morning, as we reflect together, there's one thing I hope for us to hear. And let this be my encouragement for you in the season ahead. Keep focused on Jesus. Look to him. Listen closely to him. Let him guide you as if he is alive and present which he very much is. You know, I think every church aspires to this in some way. Let it be more than an aspiration. Make it the pattern of your life together. Keep gathering in groups, big and small. Sound out the scriptures. Stay in step with the Spirit. Also, keep open and moving onwards. Share what you are hearing. Test everything in a spirit of hopeful anticipation. I'm reminded of Peter Robelin's words at our retreat last fall. Wouldn't it be something if Church of the Resurrection became known for listening to Jesus? That would be something, and wonderfully unique. This is my hope for you in the months and years ahead. It's the hope that I have for myself, too, that together we would keep listening to Jesus and following his lead, and that this would be our biggest contribution to the church and to our communities, whether here in East York or in Sussex Corner, New Brunswick. Notice how this connects with our gospel reading for today. Maybe you've already been thinking about this. The way John has written his gospel, he not only encourages us to listen to Jesus and to follow him, but he also lays out the kind of life that we can anticipate by doing this. Let's turn there right now. Would you grab a pew Bible? 995 is the page number. John 14. First, some context. This passage comes from a larger section of John's gospel that runs all the way to chapter 17. Jesus has shared his final meal with the disciples, and he is now preparing them for his departure, not only looking forward to the cross, but also to his ascension. Throughout, he's comforting his disciples and giving them encouragement for carrying on in his mission after he is gone. The disciples are confused and are asking him questions. Where are you going? How do we get there? Why aren't you sharing this with others too? You know, these are natural questions for those assuming that Jesus is the long-awaited shepherd king of Israel. Why so cryptic in your teaching, Jesus? Why so private? What are you waiting for? When can we get this movement started? Jesus responds by once again reframing the mission of the Messiah. For generations, people have been hoping for a kind of military hero to liberate Israel from the oppressive powers of Rome. Jesus unsettles all of those assumptions. The mission of Israel's Messiah isn't about violent revolution and conquest. It's about God loving the whole world into new life through the gift of his Son. It's about the disciples sharing together in that mission, in self-giving, sacrificial love as they follow Jesus into his death and into his resurrection. Look with me at our passage today. I'm going to read it again. Jesus replied, "Anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. Anyone who does not love me will not obey my teaching. These words you hear are not my own. They belong to the Father who sent me. All this I have spoken while still with you. But the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. Peace I leave you. My peace I give you. I do not give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. You heard me say, I'm going away and I'm coming back to you. If you loved me, you would be glad that I'm going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. I have told you now before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe." There's lots going on here. But notice the progression from verse 23. Right in this moment of confusion and uncertainty, Jesus encourages his disciples, and by extension, all of his followers, all the way down to people like us right here, to do three things. We're to love Jesus and to follow what he says. We're to welcome God's presence in our lives and to continue listening. And we're to live from a peace that the world can't give. Now that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? It's simple. It's straightforward. Who would resist? My question is this. Could the disciples have possibly understood what Jesus is talking about here? Do we understand? I've been reflecting this past week. There's something really attractive about Jesus' instruction and encouragement in this passage, but none of that is really intuitive or instinctive for me. I suspect that that's true for most of us. Following Jesus, welcoming God's presence, living from his peace. Somehow, I think that we have a different default. This is what I notice in myself, at least. It's this tendency to forge my own way and to assume that God is far away and uninvolved and maybe even unconcerned. I mean this at the level of practice, in the daily grind of life, when I'm alone with my thoughts and left to my own devices. And what about peace, living from God's peace? If I'm honest, that's not the first thing that's typically on my mind. What I usually find myself doing is striving to make my own peace on my own terms. Isn't this the way that we do it? Controlling the world, we're trying to. Distracting ourselves and consuming our way to peace. Why control? Well, because it's so easy to believe that anything that threatens our autonomy is the enemy of peace. So we try to stay on top, above the fray, using the power and privilege we have to our own advantage, often to the detriment of others and to the world around us. Distraction? Because some truths are too difficult to bear when we falter in this. And we do. Eventually we're made to feel our limitations and brokenness, and we're surprised to discover how our efforts at peace so often collude in violence and destruction. How can we face such truths if we are essentially alone? How can we own up to our failings if there's no accountability, no one present who is higher than ourselves? Consumption. Because this is how we fill the emptiness, that void that we feel in times of boredom or sadness when the fog descends and we don't know where to turn. Marilyn Manson, yes, Marilyn Manson, once said, "We consume because we're afraid." I think that's basically right. And here's the upshot of all these efforts at peace. We so often end up with the very opposite of what we desire. We become anxious and weary, right? Frustrated and prone to a kind of numbing complacency. Notice the contrast to our gospel reading. The peace and presence Jesus speaks of isn't gained through techniques of control or distraction or consumption. It comes as a gift, and it's available to us in the midst of crisis and conflict, rather than in spite of it. In Christ, our lives are about making good on a peace and presence that's been given, rather than struggling to produce something new. And we're to do this in all seasons, in the good and the bad, when things are going well, and when they aren't. Yes, it's about learning from Jesus and obeying his teaching. But notice this. We're invited to do that in a posture of wonder and amazement, of openness and receptivity, of welcome and trust, not of control and mastery. This isn't the setup for some new form of legalism where we heroically strive after perfection in our own strength, nor is it one more technique for guarding our own autonomy. It's about making room for something that we could never generate on our own. Following Jesus opens space for the Spirit to come into our lives and for God's peace to rule right at the very center. And it affords a kind of deep and lasting wholeness. Shalom. This is what the ancient Hebrews called it. Even in situations that would otherwise leave us feeling anxious, afraid, or confused. Even more, it empowers us to further Jesus' peacemaking mission in the world. This is really important to get. The gift is for people like us as we put our trust in Jesus, but it's meant to bring us to life and to launch us into mission rather than to render us complacent and self-satisfied. This is partly implied when Jesus treats his departure as a good thing for the disciples in terms of their own participation in his mission. Further along, he is more explicit. It is for your good that I go away. Unless I go away, the Parakletos, the Helper, the Comforter, the Advocate, God's very own Spirit, will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you. God's peace doesn't pacify or appease, nor does it tranquilize or make us numb. Rather, it empowers and transforms, instilling in us a living faith and hope and love. And it leads us to share in the reconciling power of the cross, humbly, graciously, self-sacrificially, enabling us to be alongside others as peacemakers, helping to mend broken relationships and bringing wholeness and healing across all the lines that divide. So what's our encouragement here? I think it's just this, and with this I'll close. Whatever our sense of calling in life and ministry, and whatever difficulties we experience on the journey, whether we find ourselves in a season of confusion and uncertainty, or we struggle with our own limitations and failings, let's open our hearts to Jesus. Let's keep opening our hearts to Jesus and to take all of our cues from him. And as we do, let's be ready to welcome God's presence that's been promised, to live from his reconciling peace, and to share what we have received with others. This is the path to new life, not only for ourselves and our church, but also our neighborhood, and even the whole world. May that be so. Amen.